As the U.S. Supreme Court considers a landmark decision about same-sex marriage, the culture for gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgender, and queer teens appears to be changing so rapidly that it's hard to keep up. Dr. Wes Crenshaw talks to kids every day, so if he's working hard to stay current, things must be evolving quickly. He's back to help parents catch up and understand the language, culture, and direction of teens as they traverse this swiftly changing frontier. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board certified in couples and family psychology. He holds a health certificate in sex therapy and sex education from the University of Michigan. Wes, it's always good to have you here. Welcome back.
It is great to be here.
He's joined by high school senior Julia Poe, who identifies as bisexual. She's editor-in-chief of the Shawnee Mission East Harbinger and last month was named National High School Journalist of the Year. Julia, nice to have you here and congratulations.
Thanks for having me.
Wes, we haven't done a show on this topic for about 18 months. What's changed in that time?
Well,
a lot's changing, right?
It's true. I've changed quite a bit, but I think the culture has changed. I spent the year in Michigan in part trying to really reconnect and update my experiences and understanding of all issues related to sexuality, since we do talk about it and I do so much work with it. And I've learned a lot in that time, but I think also the culture has changed. And one of the biggest things I see now for teenagers is you really, if you're going to have a conversation with them about this, the first thing you have to ask is, how do you identify? How are you, you know, and they all know what that means. And some say, oh, I'm straight, and they're very comfortable with that. The best answer I think I've gotten this year, I asked an 18-year-old, how do you identify? And she said, I'm not sure I'm old enough to have figured all that out yet.
Huh.
And that has become an interesting topic for us. By asking, I was able to kind of jump ahead and realize that was a core part of what she was exploring. So if you want to have that conversation with kids, I've learned you've got to ask.
So why is this happening? What's caused the change? Why is this notion of asking kids how you identify, why has it become part of the parlance of being a teenager these days?
It is, well, I think historically, if we really wanted to be honest about it, we've always taken what's called a heteronormative view of things. And I was as guilty of this as anybody. So if a young woman like Julia comes in, I'd say, oh, who are you dating? What's his name? And you just assume that. Well, kids, I had an interesting experience with a 25-year-old. She was telling me that when she was 12, she had a therapist, and she wished that he would have just asked her, are you gay or straight? And I looked at her and I said, I would probably be uncomfortable doing that with a 12-year-old, to be honest with you. And she said, I know. She says, I can understand how you would feel that way. But she said, I just wish that someone would have asked. I had a lot I wanted to talk about. And I took away from that this real understanding that even for younger kids, this may be an underlying question. We recently had a fifth or sixth grader who was coming out to family, and they consulted with us about how to handle that. And if you don't ask, if you don't look into it, kids won't be able to share that. Well, now we're asking more, and they are telling us. So this has always been there. Now it has become increasingly socially acceptable to talk about it.
I mean, this is a remarkable change
it
in
is.
Our culture. I mean, it's breathtaking to me because it wasn't that many years ago, as we've talked about on the show so many times, that gay boys and girls, men and women, were afraid to tell anybody they were gay. And now you're saying one thing you have very much a basic part of any conversation with a teen these days is how do you identify sexually?
Yeah, and I think it is a great value, because how much we see folks in my age range in their 50s or 30s or 40s who didn't feel that that freedom to talk about this, then struggling throughout their lives with being inauthentic to sexual identity. And of course, this is still not the majority of people, but when you ask what's changed, I am surprised how many kids are comfortable, particularly girls, but I also have plenty of guys, comfortable saying, you know, I'm not sure about this, or I am bisexual, or I'm pansexual. We'll define some terms later as we go through it.
Julia Poe, talk to me about this. Again, Shawnee Mission East senior, you're off to USC in the fall. What's happening out there that teens are so open talking about this very central aspect of who they are to lots of people.
Well, I think it's different depending on where you live. I know a lot of my friends who are living in other states, especially I have friends who live in Los Angeles, New York, all over the country. And in a lot of different places, it's just becoming something normal where coming out isn't a big deal. You don't have to pull out the Kleenex box and kind of, you know, feel like it's this big emotional thing. It's just like, hey, this is how I am. This is who I am. And people are very accepting of it. At East and kind of in the Prairie Village area, it's not becoming quite as much the norm. But I just think that it's something that we're seeing on a daily basis. I mean, making the front pages on almost a daily basis is, you know, the Supreme Court case, and it's becoming more of almost an expectation that gay marriage is going to become legalized, that there's going to be LGBT people in our lives. And I don't think it's something people can really ignore anymore. I don't think it's something that people can really push out of their daily life. You can't ignore it. It's in the media, it's in TV shows, it's in movies. And it's just, it's not something that's kind of a novelty anymore. It's just another aspect of daily life.
So as you hang out with your friends at East and even those folks who aren't necessarily that close to you, do you have a sense of who everybody is, how they self-identify? Is that something that you could sort of point to one person across the room and say, he or she is this, he or she is that?
Well, I definitely think with my friends at East, that's definitely how it is, because at East, at least, our LGBT culture and community is rather small, at least comparatively to other schools. And so we all kind of know each other. We have GSA once a week. And so I know the kids who openly identify as something. And then I know a lot of kids also who have come out to me privately, but are not necessarily out enough even to come into GSA. So in my friends, at
so,
East,
so there are
I
still
know.
A lot of kids like that who don't want to come out publicly.
Yes, especially boys. That's pretty common. But I feel like that's different at East. If I'm completely honest, we do not have as – it's not even that the culture or the community isn't open to it, but we just do not have as visible of a gay community as I have seen at other schools that my friends go to across the country.
And you'd want to see some improvement in that if you could wave a magic wand, Julia?
Oh, yes. I mean, I would love for everyone to feel as comfortable as I do. I know that when I finally realized that I was completely out to my school and okay with that, it was this great feeling of relief and comfort and confidence that comes with it. And I would love for everyone to be like that at our school. But that being said, we have multiple transgender students who have been accepted openly. Our principal was just in our GSA meeting last Monday telling us that he is going to be doing everything he can to give us support. So our community is doing as much as it can. It's just that it's not going to be the same thing as California. You know, that's just how it is. But
do you have a sense yourself, Julia, of just how rapidly the world has shifted, not in your lifetime, you are too young, but certainly in Wes Crenshaw's lifetime and yours truly's lifetime?
Oh, definitely. I would even say that it's happening in my lifetime just with, I look at the freshmen, there's so many more freshmen in GSA than there are seniors.
There was
a flood this year of them. They all came in and they were all so comfortable with being like, I don't know what I identify with, but I know that's not the typical heteronormative straight sexuality, so I'm here. And there were so many freshmen. I mean, our first day we had too many people for the classroom that we normally meet in.
This is very significant.
Yeah. Oh, dropping my jaw here.
Remember when I've said that generations really aren't literal generations anymore, that things turn over every 3 or 4 years? When Julia and I were prepping and having a delightful breakfast together, well, it was delightful because Julia was there, but we were talking about this, and she made that comment to me about it, the ninth graders being much more advanced in many ways than she had felt as a freshman. It's right on the money. It's exactly what I see too.
And why is that? How do you explain that, Julie, within your own high school, that kind of sea change taking place?
You know, we make jokes about how they're all of our Tumblr freshmen, that they're the kids that are on Tumblr all the time. And honestly, it is just media. It's you have social media forums. You have a more ready access to technology at a younger age. So these kids have been able to, if they had those questions at a younger age, were able to go out and find answers to them. And then at the same time, I think it's just becoming more and more normal to see celebrities, to see public figures coming out. I mean, I remember when Ellen Page came out, it was this huge deal. And because she had been in a lot of those movies that teenagers grew up watching. And it's kind of becoming normal. There are more TV shows that have lesbians and gay couples on them, and gay couples that are normal and go through breakups and go through not just being thrown in there for gratuitous drama, but that just go through normal, healthy and unhealthy relationships. And it's being treated less, again, as a novelty and more just as this is part of life. This happens. You can put it in a crappy CW show like The 100, and you can put it in a more serious show. Like, you can put it anywhere, and it's not going to be seen as, oh, that's just, they're just throwing that in for drama. It's actually coming in and just kind of being a part of who teens are.
I'm wondering from your perspective, Julia, how the administration at Shawnee Mission East has been able to handle this and navigate what clearly is very rapidly a rapidly changing landscape here.
You know, I don't think it's been something they've been too worried about, because we, Shawnee Mission East, despite sometimes being seen as maybe being a little more conservative, maybe having some issues like that, we've always had an accepting community, as far as I can tell from my personal experience. And
that's
I know,
my sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that there were, there was a time when Fred Phelps came and protested because we had some type of student leader who was gay, and our school rallied a huge student protest against Fred Phelps because we were not okay with that. And so I don't think it's ever been a huge issue for the administration. They don't have to deal with bullying. But like I said, Mr. McKinney, our principal, did come into GSA the other day, and he just wanted us to know that he's not just an ally, he's someone who's there looking out for us.
Well, he's quite a guy.
He is. He's phenomenal. And he's exactly what, if you want to be a principal, you should call up Mr. McKinney and just let him tell you what he does on a daily basis, because he knows what he's doing. But he's trying to work with some of the issues like transgender bathrooms and stuff like that, that can be problems that an administration would have to be at the forefront of. Besides that, there's not much he has to do, because we're lucky. We have a good community. We have a good support system. And I mean, since I've come out, I have not received a single, I've never been persecuted. I've never had anyone discriminate against me, ever.
And I would argue that, in some sense, Julia's the celebrity in this story. She's well known in the school, and so when other kids, younger kids, peers, see her comfort with this, that's part of what moves out through both the social media electronically and the traditional social media of just knowing people in the halls. That's making a big difference in our society, knowing people that are GBLTQ, and they're your friends, and they're your sister, they're your neighbor. It's they're just people, and their issues are relationship issues. They're not gay issues. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, she's a good example of how that's happening in our society.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking this morning about the sexual identity of teens, how more and more teens are talking about this openly, and how the landscape is shifting very quickly. We're going to offer some tip and some help, throw a lifeline to some adults and parents out there who I'm sure are wondering about all this as we talk about it. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Hawkeye from Overland Park, thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
What a great topic. I'm actually an atheist, and in my conversations with Christians around Kansas City, always point to the issue of sin, you know, and especially when it comes to LGBT issues. You know, though I'm straight, I'm fascinated by this topic, how Christianity here, prevalent in Midwest, is not comprehending the scientific basis of understanding of sexuality. So what kind of an issues are there for psychiatrists and psychologists and LGBT issues that you're seeing, you know, whenever you come out when it comes to religion? What could be done to break the backbone of this misunderstanding in the religion?
I think he's referring to the fact we're living in the Bible Belt, and that affects a lot of this, Wes.
Boy, we could do just about the next week's worth of shows.
Yeah, here we go.
It's funny. I don't know if he was sitting in the green room listening to Julia and I talking this morning, because we actually were visiting about that. Julia and I are both churched people. We see Christianity as inclusive, and that the message of Christ is to bring everybody to the table. I'm sure Julia agrees that isn't everybody's message, and too many of the kids I work with have come to see and been taught that religion is a judgmental process, it's a non-intellectual process, and that therefore it is exclusive of gay and lesbian issues. It's very interesting. I have a bunch of people I've seen over the years who are very devout Catholics who are also gay and lesbian, and I have tried to have them help me understand the difference between doctrine and belief, and they really are good at explaining it, and they basically say, this is my church, this is my relationship with God, I'm not going to let anyone tell me otherwise. And so I think it begins with people taking back their faith and asserting it as free and open to everyone.
But certainly there are lots of folks in our listenership area, 90 miles going out in any direction, who would have very strong feelings the other way on this, Wes. And
yes.
You'd say what?
I work with those folks. Ultimately, if someone's belief is exclusive, that's who they're going to be. And it's very sad when that is in a family, when someone feels they must eject their child because their child is no longer with God. And that is about as painful as it gets to sit and to see that happen. The good news is, just as I was saying a minute ago, when people know those folks, they can also know them as believers, they can know them as people in their pew. And I think what I am surprised about is how much people I would have never believed could accept and embrace a gay friend or child or neighbor in their church are able to do it now, even very conservative positions. I think even that is under change. But there's going to be people who just most assuredly can't do this and will be very angry about it.
Julia Poe, how about your own sort of faith journey here? It sounds like you have one. How has that gone for you?
Well, for me at least, it's been very positive. If you are struggling with your faith and your sexuality at the same time, come to the Presbyterian Church, because my church, we can have gay pastors in the National Presbyterian Church. We have gay pastors. Gay marriage is highly supported. We recently had a national vote that said that churches can do gay marriage. Every year, our pastor gives an extremely moving sermon about how his faith journey has brought him to believe that no sexuality is a sin. And it's just, that's the environment that I grew up in. I had a very unique faith journey where I found my faith on my own. I became part of the church on my own without my family. So it was always a choice for me. Mm-hmm. It was always a choice where I went.
Your parents were okay with that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My parents both are, my mom is a faith-based person. My dad is more agnostic, but they were raised in the church and they didn't really want to raise me in the church. They wanted it to be my own choice. And I found my faith that way.
How did you find the church?
I found the church. My friend Hannah took me to youth choir. Actually, when I was struggling with a really bad injury, I had to quit all my sports and I was really depressed. So she got me into choir as just something I could do that wasn't sports, that I could do with the injury I had.
What a smart friend.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was phenomenal for me. Biggest support I had at that time. And she got me in the church that way, and I started going just to sing. And then I started showing up at youth group, and then I started showing up all the time. And that's been the biggest support for me through everything that I went through in high school and middle school. And so that's been really good for me. And even, I will say, with friends outside of my church, I've had friends who are Catholic who, when I came out to them, I had a really, really good friend who told me that, you know, he's like, this is what I believe, and I believe it's a sin, mm-hmm. but I love you so much, and I could call him crying about something with a girl, and he would just listen and give me advice just as well, and he would never argue.
You've been fortunate. You've been surrounded by supportive people throughout your life here, it sounds like.
Very, very. I have been about as lucky as you can get with any of this.
And Wes, I'm gathering that some of what Julie is experiencing is a little bit on the rare side, maybe.
Well, I'm going to argue that chance favors only the prepared mind, and that Julie is pretty good at, like, listen to her description of finding a church in a faith family to be with. I think Julie is agentic, is what we call that, is being able to reach out and seek support. And I think if you do that, it generates that kind of support. So she may think she's lucky. I think she's pretty smart.
Let me go back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. The sexual identity of teens is our topic here today. Tam from Midtown, welcome to Up to Date.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm a 60-year-old lesbian. I came out 40 years ago, and I've been in a relationship for 21 years. I want to say how glad I am that the kids nowadays are growing up with less fear. I was alive during Stonewall, and the first 40 years of my life, I was out to friends, but I was closeted to everyone else. When I came out to my parents, I lost both of them in regard to close contact, and you know, that was hard. But the level of fear for 40 years of worrying about your job and, you know, whether you'd be fired and this sort of thing, it's making my head spin how fast things have changed.
And what do you attribute that to, Tam? Why is it changing as quickly as it is?
Well, you know, I think that when the marriage equality movement first started, I, as an older lesbian, thought it was a huge mistake. I thought they should go for civil union because I thought no one would accept, you know, gay marriage. And I've been astounded as I've watched the last, you know, 10, 15 years at how things have moved. And now I realize I was wrong, that they, you know, that this might very well this summer become a reality to all of us. I think that the activists who, you know, forced this into the mainstream, you know, are the ones that deserve the credit, because what's happened is that people who are haters are much more in the minority than the people who are supportive.
Right.
Like Julia, in 40 years of being out, I've still never really ever been treated pejoratively. You know, there was that huge fear that would happen, but it never materialized.
Right.
And so I want to say how grateful I am that these kids are as open and honest as they are, and they won't have to live, you know, in fear, whether the fear is real or not.
Julie, Tam, I'm glad you called. And before we go to a break, Julie and Wes, I wanted to get to this notion of maybe defining each of the letters in LGBTQIA and this notion that there's lots of definitions out there, lots of possibilities. And also the use of the word queer is not what it used to be. It's more acceptable these days. Who wants to take a stab at walking through some of this here?
I'll do queer because there's too many letters and Julie is smarter and probably has higher ACT scores than I do, so she can do all the letters. The term queer is one of those terms that got repurposed, that it was originally a term to put people down, that you're like a weirdo queer. And the what I now refer to as the queer community sort of repurposed that to mean not straight. So I think one of the funniest things ever, I actually have quite a few lesbian clients, and they've been really good to me over the years in enculturating me and how to understand what it is to be a lesbian. And I'll never forget one of them said to me one day, I said something about she had been trying to teach me that this was a good word. And one day I said, well, you know, I was talking to someone in the queer community that she goes, aw, you said queer. And then I knew that I had arrived.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Julia, walk us through some of these letters, this acronym that we hear so much about, LGBTQIA.
Okay, so the first few are easier. So you have the L, which is lesbian, G, which is gay.
And the difference being what?
Okay, so as far as my friends and I use it, lesbian is just basically a woman who is attracted to other women. Gay is a man who is attracted to other men.
Okay.
Then you have the B, which is bisexual. So that is either a man or a woman who is attracted to both genders. So that's how I identify. And it basically, for me at least, that means that it doesn't really matter either way. But there are many bisexual people who have kind of a range where they're mostly attracted to males, but sometimes attracted to females or vice versa. So there's a range there. So that's LGB. Then T is transgender. And that's less of a sexuality thing sometimes. That's actually where you are born with a male body, but you identify as female or vice versa. And then
Bruce Jenner.
Correct. That's a great example. Bruce Jenner is a fantastic example. And then you can go through a process. Luckily, now you can go through actual, like, medical processes to basically take on that gender, which is actually appropriate for who you are emotionally.
It's called gender reassignment.
Okay.
So that's LGBT. Q is this queer word, which I still personally have a problem with just because I've heard too many guys in, you know, different classes throw around the word queer. I've heard it used as kind of just the same as fag, basically, for so long.
Which is always considered a pejorative.
Always bad. Yeah. Never use that word. But I've heard queer used negatively enough that I still wince a little bit whenever I hear it. And I'll call out straight guys for using it all the time because I just still don't think it's cool. But it's kind of becoming one of those. It's almost like the N-word has become in the black community where it's been reappropriated to mean something that shows kind of a community. Mm-hmm. And so that's just this blanket statement of queer that you fall under that. You're basically not that heteronormative, I'm a boy and I like girls, or I'm a girl and I like boys.
Wes, take the I and the A.
So I is intersex, and that has to do with genital and not being medically or physiologically the same gender as you are genetically or psychologically. It's a little more, it's actually one we're not using as much anymore. I was taught not to use it, and now it's showing back up again. And I'm not sure what the A is. What's the A, Julia?
Well, if you don't know what the A is, we're all in trouble. A.
The A is asexual.
Oh, how did I miss that?
And that basically means that you do not have sexual attraction towards anyone.
Is that common, Wes?
Well, I can talk a lot about that. There's also a thing called aromantic, which means you don't have like a sort of an emotional feeling for others.
Right.
One of the probably we can talk about that a little more in the next half of the hour because it is showing up more commonly than I would have expected.
Wes, what's the current thinking among teens and young adults about whether one is born with a predisposition or if sexual orientation these days is seen as more of a choice?
Well, historically, there was a small body of research that indicated that there was a predisposition to be gay or lesbian. And that was very important to the community and its movement to say, you know, we're not out here picking our sexuality. This is a part of who we are intrinsically. And that made sense at the time. What I see young people today doing, though there are still those who feel that way, are really saying this is, I get to choose how I want to express myself. If I feel equally inclined to date a guy or a girl, I want to choose to express that. And so I think there's more rejection of this idea of a predisposition.
More of a choice kind of thing.
And they want to embrace that because, you know, the way I look at it is teenagers are all about independence and freedom. They're all about the freedom to choose. And not just to be rebellious, but as to form their identities. And so it makes sense to me that young people would, when given the option, say, this is about me choosing how I want to explore. So I think that may be no longer necessary and that it's okay if people recognize a historic feeling throughout their lives of being attracted to same sex, but it's no longer considered an important point to make.
Julie, are you seeing it the same way?
Yeah, I think I am, because the way that I see it, it's becoming less of, at least for me, it's becoming less of an identifier of who I am. I don't see myself as being a bisexual. I see myself as being bisexual, just like I'm blonde, just like I'm a journalist. Mm-hmm. And I identify more as being a journalist or a Christian than I do as being a bisexual. It does not decide my political beliefs. It does not decide my friend group. It decides really nothing about me except for who I date. And, you know, the same way that I like girls who are shorter than me or like football players, that's kind of going to be the same thing as what gender I like. So it's becoming less of it. It's almost becoming less of an issue. And as it's becoming less of an issue, I don't think it's being seen in the same traditional way that it used to be seen.
We had one phone call from Ken who's disappeared about this idea of what services in the community, if I understood his question correctly, what services are present, what services are lacking. Wes, what do you see?
I think it really depends on your age.
When it comes
age.
To helping teens out here.
Yeah, for age group. Now, Julia's used the term, and I don't remember if you said what it is. GSA is Gay Straight Alliance. There are different names for that in different schools, but they have a really strong one at East, and I think they do in most schools. Our two high schools, big high schools in Lawrence, have very strong GSA programs. I think that most schools, at least public schools on this side of the line that I know more about, are probably pretty good first steps. I think there are therapists increasingly who identify themselves as versed in working with gay and lesbian clients. I don't necessarily market that way, but I do certainly have that breadth of experience. And I think if you're looking for a therapist in the community who does that kind of work, it's good to find somebody who is very open to that kind of discussion, because when you're working with teenagers, you're going to be working with sexuality. It's just that's big part of the development, as we've talked about many times. And today, dealing with sexuality is also going to involve some experience of sexual identity and gender identity.
Julie, are there services out there that kids can take advantage of and tap into, or is there a dearth of those kinds of things?
You know, obviously at the school level, you're going to have GSA. You can find a therapist. A lot of my friends, though, what they look for is a lot of kids now are going online. And that can be so dangerous, but it can also be so helpful. And it depends. Dangerous because there are a lot of kids out there that are going through a lot of really bad things. And while they're going through problems with their sexuality, they're going through problems with their body image, with the way they see themselves. They're having friends issues. If you venture out onto Tumblr, it's a scary place. That's where I went a lot when I was figuring out my sexuality. And there are a lot of kids out there who are really struggling just to figure out who they are, and sexuality is a part of that. That being said, if you go on YouTube, there are many different people who have kind of YouTube shows, and they'll talk about coming out, and they'll talk about how they identify, and they'll tell their stories. And for me, finding people who I could look at who looked like me, or who were, you know, pretty successful women out there who were talking about, okay, this is how I came out. For a long time, I was really obsessed with this one couple, these two girls called Rose and Rosie, who do this show just on a weekly basis where they post a 10-minute little thing where they talk about their lives and talk about, you know, they live together and just kind of talk about their lives and their jobs. And they're really funny and British. And my parents didn't really understand it. But what it did for me was it let me look at these two girls who are pretty and successful and young and hip, and it let me see these people who I could be like, okay, I can be like that, and I can be okay. Mm-hmm. And so if you find things like that, everyone's different. But for me, I did a lot of reading, and I went out there, and I found different things like that on YouTube where it wasn't a community because there was no one I really reached out to and talked to, but I felt like I had someone there who I could look at and be like, okay, they're cool, they're like me, and I'm different from them, but I'm also similar to them.
And I would also suggest Autostraddle. for lesbians in particular. I don't know if you use it, Julia.
It's a website?
It's called AutoStraddle, and it is really the one of the best resources for lesbians, I guess of any age, but at least the ones in the age group I work with.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Nancy from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your show.
Sure.
I had a comment about the letter A. When I came out in the mid-70s, there wasn't this word salad, but my understanding of letter salad, my understanding of the word A originally was for allied. In other words, for people who were straight or identified as heterosexual who supported the gay rights movement. Has it been changed to asexual, or is it still, is it both allied and asexual?
Well,
and I'm addressing my question to Julia. I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy.
So obviously I'm no expert. I am a 17-year-old, so I might have gotten that one wrong. If I did, I'm sorry. As far as I know, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I just assumed that it was asexual, and asexuality is definitely an important part of the LGBT community. If it stands for allied, that's great too, because we love straight people who are down with LGBT issues.
And we're getting calls from folks who are saying that Q can also mean questioning. Referring to people who are still unsure and still trying to figure it out, Wes.
Yeah, that's the great double use of Q. When you're really in the salad, it'll have two Qs in it. Julia's correct on the asexual. Historically, that's where GSA came from, Gay Straight Alliance, and you had the allies who were people who were supportive. But today there is this whole other identity of being asexual. These are people who do, and I have worked with them. They're not a tiny group who do not feel sexual, and that's different than having low arousal. One of the things the sex therapist has to do is evaluate in those cases whether the person is just having a difference of arousal, or whether historically sexual imagery and intrigue and that kind of thing have just not been meaningful for that person. And that's historically been looked at as a dysfunction. And the reason A now shows up as asexual is it can also be an identity. And so that kind of explains that.
Anne Marie from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. My comment was kind of for Julia. I was growing up and I graduated in the mid-90s. And one of my best friends came out around our junior, senior year. And it was extraordinarily traumatic. It really shaped my views on everything with that. And it made me political for gay rights. And I'm wondering if there's any concern that, I guess, today's kids who have grown up in a more supportive environment are going to be less politically involved or less politically active for these issues.
Julia, what do you think?
Well, first, I just want to thank you for being one of the people who did become politically active there. I am resting on the laurels of the people who have become politically active in that sense. That being said, I don't think in general with this generation, as far as my friends are concerned, that you need to worry about us not becoming political about anything. I have seen just so many of my friends become very politically involved and become very strong and vocal about their political views in the last few years as we've been growing up and kind of becoming young adults. And I think that sexuality is definitely an area that people become very vocal about. The thing with my generation is that it's more of an understood, it's an understanding that people have between all sides of the political spectrum, except for, you know, a few. It's one of those things where in my Gov class, I'm taking AP Gov right now, and we have many, many great debates. And there's always this understanding that gay marriage should be legal. And that's not a question in our minds anymore. It's an expectation. I was telling Wes this earlier. All of my friends, and not even my friends, people who have completely different political opinions than I do, all of us seem to have this feeling that gay marriage should have been legal like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been. It's a bygone conclusion. It's happening right now. And no one seems to really be concerned with whether or not it should be legalized. It's just, when's that going to happen? So to answer your question, I don't think that you need to worry about kids becoming politically active. It's just how they're doing that. A lot of kids take to Twitter and Facebook to voice their opinions, and I would love to see kids get out there and be even more active with it. But like I said, that fight was fought by people like you who started that fight back, you know, 10 years ago.
Way before it was cool.
Or 50 years ago, but who's counting?
You know,
it seems like. Wes, what's the typical pattern for how kids come out these days, and how do you advise them on coming out to family and friends these days?
Yeah, it's a different model, really, than it used to be. And it, for people in Julia's age, it's a little different than it even is for 5 or 6 years older than her. And so the old model, for lack of a better term, the old model is sort of the big, what I call the big production, where you kind of get up your courage and you stand up in front of a group of your friends and you make an announcement. You have like a PowerPoint presentation about it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that has really given way, and I no longer advise that mechanism, to really more of something that equates to, hey, I have a new girlfriend, if I'm Julia, and her name is Susan. And the family takes a second to register and think, wait a minute, Susan's a girl, you're a girl, wow, you're dating someone of the same sex. And that tends to go better than I am gay. One of the things we won't probably have enough time to really discuss is that having same-sex partners does not make one gay. And I understand this is very complicated. One of my learnings from Michigan this year is that to identify as gay is something you say, I am gay. So many people have same-sex partners, but that's not their primary attraction. It may be out of convenience. It may be out of opportunity. Maybe they really like the person. And so they have same-sex partners, but they don't see themselves as primarily attracted to a same-sex person.
Yeah, you're confusing people
I
out there.
Know.
This is getting to be. This is really
run
a dynamically shifting, altering thing you're describing.
Trust
here.
Me when I say,
it's hard for you to hang on to.
Yeah, when Joe Court is a psychologist in the greater Detroit area, and he taught this class for us at KU. He's a gay man, and he finally got me through this of sort of explaining how to understand it. So it's just easier at this point if you're dating someone of the same sex. And if you say, if you know I am gay, this is who I am, great. That's something you can say. But coming out, it becomes a much more natural process, like this is my new dating partner. That's working much better for parents who are, say, under the age of 45.
Yeah.
For the ones older than that, there's a required production, and I try to work with those families to be accepting and to understand where we are with culture today, but also with the young people to understand there is a limit on people's ability to ramp up their experience.
What do you recommend to parents who are listening to this, and maybe we've blown a few minds out there today and they're trying to put themselves back together, but how are parents supposed to respond to this and keep up with changes that even you have trouble keeping up with, Wes?
The first thing to do, remember we have our PLUS model, which is pause, listen, understand, and be sex positive, but you want to start that model long before anybody discloses anything to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have kids, it is my strongest recommendation. You sit down with a mirror or a video camera or on your way to work with the door shut in your car and go through this scenario. Think, my daughter Julia may come to me and say, I am a lesbian. And how am I going to respond to that? And run through a bunch of different scenarios, because this is what we call in psychology systematic desensitization. You're going through an imaginary process and seeing how you will respond. And the first two or three times, you might, I don't know, run the car in a ditch. I don't know what you do. But ultimately, you become more comfortable with this idea. And then you move on to, you know, parents do this with pregnancy. They think, oh my gosh, what would I do if my daughter got pregnant? That one we've kind of acclimated to. Parents have to go beyond that now and really think through these different scenarios before they happen.
Julia Poe, what would you recommend to parents out there thinking about this? What do you want to see parents? How should they respond?
You know, I think, first off, if you have a kid who's young, don't try to push them into one norm or another. Mm-hmm. Don't feel like you have to be weird or overbearing with it, but just, I wouldn't have minded if my parents had been, you know, and they never really cared that much about relationships. It was never like a, when you have a husband, when this, when that. But, you know, I think that if my parents, if I just didn't always have that mindset of I will grow up and only date boys and marry a guy someday, I probably would have started questioning that a little bit younger. That being said, my parents and I had a hard coming out process, but a really good one once we got past some initial problems.
Hard because why?
Well, I made the gay teen mistake that everyone makes where they try to date someone in private, like hiding it from their parents. And that's just not a good idea, honestly. If you're a gay teen or you're questioning, talk to your parents about it, because I tried to hide a relationship from my parents, and that led to some pretty shady behavior. I made very bad choices, and I was with a girl who both of us were in not positive emotional states, so both of us were going through difficult things outside our relationship. When that came together, we were having a negative relationship because of it, and my parents didn't want me dating her, not because I was bisexual, but because of just the nature of the relationship. So we went through a really hard time where they were getting used to me being bi, and at the same time, I thought that I was going through all this, well, they don't want me to date her because she's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And if she had been a guy, they still wouldn't have wanted me to date her because I was so depressed. Mm-hmm. I was suicidal at the time. Mm. I had a suicide attempt. It was all, you know, I was in a bad place. I wasn't in a place to date anyone. I was in a place to be going to therapy and working on Harbinger, which is our school publication, and just doing my schoolwork and trying to get back to a place of normalcy. And so that first year was hard. I dated a girl in secret for a year, and my parents kept catching me, and we had no trust, and it was just, you know, it was difficult. It was very difficult.
And I just want to make a point. See how critical it is that Julia's parents had to distinguish between, we don't like you being gay or bisexual, which is a non-starter, and your dating partner is a problem and detrimental to you. If parents go down the first path, they're never going to get to actually protect the child from problematic dating. It's as good an example as I can think of.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I'm hearing an answer here today about how parents can help really begin to sort this out. I mean, it seems to me there's almost a college course that ought to be taught here.
There should. It's a good idea.
Help parents navigate all this.
Let's do that.
And I'm not sure I'm hearing that or seeing that right now. And I'm just thinking about parents out there of 11, 12, 13-year-old kids trying to figure this out. And the world is shifting so quickly. How are they supposed to hang on to this, Wes?
I think at every opportunity from that age and earlier to talk about relationships and sexuality, you take that. That's not our best thing in this society. It's getting better. I'm firm because of this show, Steve. We're changing the world.
I hope we're helping.
People are getting better about these conversations around the country. And so you start talking about it and you say, oh, did you see that, you know, gay marriage is going to be probably the law of the land here one of these days, and get kids engaged in that. I think kids are interested in issues like that at any age. And once they hear you feeling comfortable talking about that and you don't choke up and feel scared, they will be open to talking about it and thinking more broadly of their own relationships. And then when you – I think Julia's point about not like – pushing them down one path or the other is a good one. If your child says, well, I think I'm gay, you don't have to jump on and say, oh, that's so great, you're gay, now you're gay. Kids are exploring, they're learning, and the more we facilitate that, the more they can come back later and do it wisely.
We'll have to leave our conversation there. What an interesting one it was. I want to thank Dr. Wes Crenshaw, board certified in couples and family psychology. He holds a health certificate in sex therapy and sex ed from the University of Michigan. Wes, always good to have you here.
Always great to be here.
And Julia Poe from Shawnee Mission East, the National High School Journalist of the Year. Thanks so much for your great contributions today, Julia. Appreciate it.
Thank you again.
Congratulations again.